This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. on Wednesday, the 25th of November. You are listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and myself, Audrey Raj. In less than half an hour, we will have the breakfast grill. And who do we have on the grill today? Xiaoning, you give us the details.
Okay. So Roshan Kunnison will be speaking to David Low, who's the Southeast Asia General Manager at Luno. And this is all about Bitcoin, because as we know, it's tripled since its low in March. It's hovering around the $19,000 mark for a Bitcoin. Now, the cryptocurrency, of course, has seen the boost from the pandemic and expansionary monetary policy, as some investors actually look for inflationary hedges. But that said, how well received is cryptocurrency in Malaysia and the rest of Southeast Asia? So Roshan's going to find out. He's going to speak to David Low, who is the Southeast Asia General Manager for Luno, a regional cryptocurrency trading platform. And that's going to be happening after the 8 a.m. news bulletin.
Right. But for now, we have a guest waiting on the line to speak to us about India's rejection of the RCEP.
Yeah, so we know that last week, 15 countries made the decision to participate in this China-backed Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, known as RCEP. Yeah, and India wasn't one of them. So the country opted out after negotiations failed to address its concerns of the elimination of tariffs, which would open India's markets to imports and in turn, they argue, harm local producers. Now, India's allergy to trade is not new. Between 2016 to 2020, India introduced the second highest number of trade restrictions among all group of 20 economies, and this is according to the Global Trade Alert database. Now, with the world's fifth largest economy not among the world's top 10 trading powers, will their rejection of RCEP and the free market trade make them less relevant though?
Right. So to weigh in on India's decision, we have on the line with us right now Dr. Amitendu Palit, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. Doctor, thank you for joining us today. Now, India has a history of rejecting trade agreements in the past. Negotiations with the likes of Australia and the US, they weren't exactly fruitful. So maybe you can walk us through the reasons behind India's reluctance to trade.
I think India has become much more resistant to participating in free trade negotiations over the last 5 to 6 years. Prior to that, if you look at India's history of trade engagement, India was always an active participator in the multilateral trade talks at the WTO, and then even later joined several bilateral and regional free trade agreements, including Singapore, Malaysia, and then Japan and Korea. India was also negotiating a large number of free trade agreements, including with the European Union. It was a part of the RCEP, bilateral discussions with Australia and Canada. But over the last 5 to 6 years, there has been a growing sense of disappointment in India over the benefits that are arising from this free trade agreement. While India has been offering fairly generous market access to a large number of products from its free trade agreement partners, its own products are not able to capture as much market share in other partner country markets. Now, this has led to the view that India should carefully look at various trade agreements, their prospects, and if those prospects don't appear good and strong enough in its national economic interests, then India should not continue to stay engaged in this conversation.
But then do you think that India's anti-trade stance and decision to sit out the RCEP agreement will prove disastrous for them in the long run?
If India is to achieve its bigger economic targets in terms of sustaining a GDP growth rate of more than 8% in a consistent fashion for a fairly long period of time, and at the same time also aspire to become a middle-income country by increasing the per capita incomes of its population, then it is very important for India to follow a growth policy which will ensure that it is able to capture larger shares of global markets, which means Indian exports of products and services have to be competitive enough. To achieve those objectives, India must be able to get investments into its country, which are export-oriented investments. India must also build capacity, which are able to produce export-oriented products of sufficient volume on scale. Now, the question over here is, can India achieve this without staying engaged in free trade agreements? My view is that India cannot. So if India does need to pursue this overall objective of economic growth and economic success over a period of time, it must follow a rational policy of engaging in free trade agreements. It cannot afford to become completely disengaged from trade agreements.
Right. So we understand why this is happening. The government is in pursuit of a self-reliant India. But against the current pandemic and the country's economic crisis, will this idea run out of steam quickly, the same way Prime Minister Modi's Made in India campaign did back in 2014? It was no doubt a successful campaign, but it was short-lived.
Now, of course, we live in a world which is heavily integrated and globalized, and countries freely trade with each other. If there is a tendency on part of some countries to rely excessively on a few other countries for supply of certain items, and if the second group of countries tend to suffer from an outbreak of a pandemic like the COVID-19, then there is an overall supply disruption for all countries, or most of them, in major parts of the world. So to that extent, getting out of that dependence in the long term can only be achieved if there is sufficient domestic capacity that are developed. Having said that, a country cannot possibly develop sufficient domestic capacity in various items that it requires. And even while developing those capacities, and we are aware of the intricacies of supply chains and the way they build production from raw material to the final product. So I think if the subject of self-reliance or Atmanirbhar remains essentially a policy of inward-looking import substitution, then it is unlikely to provide its long-term benefits. But if it is able to combine it with a rational policy of engaging in trade agreements and including invitation to essential imports in desired areas, then it is a policy which might turn out to be well and purposeful in the long term.
Now, Prime Minister Modi's plan to be self-reliant and lure capital from China sounds like a solid framework if India has the policies, infrastructure and right conditions in place. But do you think it's able to do so?
I think the India-China relationship at this point in time is actually probably at its lowest level over the last 40 to 50 years. Now, at this stage, I think it's important to understand that India and China are two very big economies, and they are neighbors. Their relationship is actually very complex. So while the rest of the world and other countries might look at China in a particular way, it is difficult for India to actually look at China rising fast and utilizing its economic growth in order to obtain strategic influence with a number of other countries around India. Now, given this reality, the problem that India has been facing is that because India depends heavily on China for sourcing its imports, whenever there is a political problem, that holds India back from giving an effective response. But India has not yet come out with any policies to restrict trade with China per se. At the same time, I think the realization in India is also very clear, that the dependence on China on imports is not exclusive to China. India does depend on the rest of the world. There are initiatives that India has started putting in place, like production-linked incentives for encouraging bottom-up manufacturing in important lines of production like smartphones, electronic components, so on and so forth. But these are all policies that are going to take time to produce.
Right. Thank you for that, sir. That was Dr. Amitendu Palit, Senior Research Fellow at the Institute of South Asian Studies at the National University of Singapore. We're going to take a quick break for some messages right now, but up next we'll be speaking to Ng Su Lin, Head of Indirect Tax at KPMG Malaysia, on tax reforms in Malaysia. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.